The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi Canada. Happy anniversary of D-Day. It's June 6th in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. A lot has happened overnight. Of course, we all watched, or at least most of us watched some online or live, of the wonderful Platinum Jubilee that the Queen presided over. Indomitable, dutiful, how the Queen was determined to reign on her parade, reign being R-E-I-G-N, to those of you in Pittsburgh. And it was a fine, fine weekend of celebration, capped off, of course, by a surprise vote of no confidence election in Boris Johnson, which will happen at 3 p.m. East Coast time, noon in the West today. That's right, 54 members of the Tory party. Now, the way it works in Great Britain, they're not going to an election. Just a bunch of the members of the Conservative Party have had it with Boris, and they send letters to something called the 1922 Committee, or the Committee on 1922, or 1922 something or other. And the senior member of the party is the chair of that. And when he counts 15% of letters demanding a vote of no confidence, they have a vote of no confidence. And so Boris got hit with that this morning. The magic number of 54 was greeted. I think some Tory members of parliament were watching Boris get booed on his way into St. Paul's Cathedral for the platinum celebrations yesterday. And they said, you know, we're going to lose a couple of by-elections this month and we're going to get crushed if Boris is the leader. So we better dump him now. We still have 2+ years left in the majority. We can get ourselves a new prime minister. I don't know if he survives this or not. I have no idea. I've been reading the tweets by his members of his dutiful cabinet, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Sunak, and the Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, and others are out there saying, go Boris. But you never know. It's a secret ballot. So check your headlines. I'm a subscriber to The Telegraph, and I love British politics, but didn't see this one coming. New York Times has also caught up on it. Conservative lawmakers deal Prime Minister Boris Johnson a potentially lethal blow to his leadership on Monday when they triggered a no-confidence vote that could force him from power a little more than 2 years after his landslide election victory. Doesn't help to make rules and ignore them. Doesn't help. The unclear part is who would replace him. There are odds, of course, because there are always odds on everything in Great Britain. They are appear to favor Liz Truss, if you ask me, but don't ask me because it's not American politics, it's British politics. Ukraine's forces have counterattacked and they've taken back parts of Severodonetsk over the weekend, and they are waiting on supplies of weaponry from the West. Russia is just getting chewed up here. They might be gaining a kilometer here and a kilometer there, but they're just getting chewed up. In the Washington Post this morning, as war drags on, weary Russians yearn for a return to normal life. That's not happening, because when you lose your McDonald's and your Starbucks and nobody wants to deal with you because you've got a crazy man running your country, it takes a while to get the economy back. In fact, they haven't even felt the economy yet because the Central Bank of Russia is busy propping up the ruble. They can't do that forever. Hong Kong police quashed a vigil marking Tiananmen Square massacre. That's the anniversary of today as well. Gunmen in southwest Nigeria entered a Catholic church yesterday, St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Ondo State, and the death toll is going to be 50 or higher in a is obviously believed by most to be an Islamist terrorist attack, as happens occasionally. So 50 dead in Nigeria. Not sure what the total number, what the upper limit is. Could be higher than 50 means anything. Australia has accused China of intercepting a surveillance plane The Chinese J-16 fighter intercepted a P-18 maritime surveillance aircraft during routine surveillance over international waters on May 26. The new government said it's a dangerous maneuver. China gonna be China. From the Financial Times, the headline, rumors that Xi Jinping is losing his grip on power are greatly exaggerated. Evidence is thin that past episodes of factional strife in China's Communist Party are repeating themselves. Three dead, at least 11 wounded in a shootout in downtown Philadelphia on Sunday night. This is not a, quote, mass shooting, although some have erroneously used that. It's a gang fight in a crowded part of town. That's what that was. And this area of South Street is a very happening place. It's like, Old Town Alexandria or 14th Street, Washington, D.C., or you name any downtown space in any big city where people congregate on Saturday night, and some gunfights broke out among bad guys, and a lot of people were caught in the crossfire. But it is not what happened at Sandy Hook or Rob. Some good news. A cancer trial's unexpected result. A small study of colorectal cancer, 18 people involved, 18 cases of remission. This is the New York Times yesterday. That is really remarkable. It's unheard of, a complete remission of every patient in a trial, 18 for 18. And so GlaxoSmithKline will be moving forward with that study, I think. Just wanted to tell you a little bit of good news this morning. Bad news, individual income tax payments on pace to reach a record level. That's right, more money than we've ever paid before, but Joe needs more. How the White House lost Joe Manchin and his plan to just transform America. The White House, that's a terrible headline, even though it's from my paper, The Washington Post. It ought to read, How the White House lost Joe Biden and Biden lost his plan to transform America. It reminds us that even at 8.5% inflation, Joe Biden wanted to spend $2 trillion additional dollars in December and on November. Goodness knows, I guess he wanted 12% inflation. Big story in the Post as well on John Fetterman, the Democratic nominee who will be facing Dr. Oz. John Fetterman's really sick. Say a prayer for him. But he hasn't appeared since the election day when he had a stroke and he had a pacemaker put in. And they have not been forthcoming. He's not been forthcoming. His campaign staff sort of apologized yesterday over the weekend about his heart condition and the damage done by the stroke. Wish him a rapid recovery. But he really ought to step aside, it sounds like, and let Conor Lamb run. But he's not going to. He's going to count on, I don't know, he wasn't going to win anyway. He's off the left. January 6th committee makes its debut this weekend, and I'm guaranteeing you right now, their ratings are going to be lower than mine were at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday mornings after the infomercial on MSNBC. For those of you who don't know, MSNBC, when they signed me to NBC contract, guaranteed me a weekend show by Andy Lack. Griffin really didn't like that idea, so when it came time to put it on, he put it on at 7:30 in the morning, and about 75,000 people watch it every Saturday morning, which is really the lowest rated show in the history of MSNBC. I don't think 75,000 people are going to watch those hearings because nobody cares. Everybody knows what happened. Less than 900 people, more than 800 people entered the Capitol. The prosecutions are proceeding. A bunch of people don't want to deal with the committee because it's a partisan committee with two dress-up Republicans on there, Liz Cheney and the guy from Chicago who's not running again, the annoying fellow. And that's not enough cover for the fact it's an aberration. It's not a real committee. It's a complete breakdown of the House process. It's a political hit job by Nancy Pelosi. And I don't care. You don't care. I ain't going to play a minute of tape from it. I'm not going to watch 1 minute of it. It's a show trial. We don't do show trials in the United States, and I like hearings. I like Benghazi. I like Iran-Contra. I loved Watergate in 1973, but I'm not watching that one because it's fake. Big story in the New York Times on Suffolk County's red flag law. And it does work. It does work. It's a pretty interesting story. 1.5 million residents, 117 final orders to take guns away for at least 6 months. The youngest subject of a red flag was 14. The oldest was 88. The stories are all there. Macy's, it turns out, bought all the wrong clothes for the summer. They thought people would still be at home. They're not, and they're out of clothes for going back to work for women. The latest U.S. COVID-19 surge is moving from east to west, as it hits the Rocky Mountains. And Vladimir Putin over the weekend threatened new targets if the U.S. supplies long-range weapons. Not clear what that means. Not clear what Putin says at all. The foreign minister said, don't hold your breath if you think Putin's sick and dying. I don't know what that means either. I know that we weren't expecting a vote of no confidence on Monday, June 6th in Great Britain, but that's what we get. Will it be Boris's D-Day? We'll find out whether or not he has a wall or not. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, coming right back. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Selena Zito for the Inzer Report from Pittsburgh. Selena, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sunshine. I'm swell. How are you?
I'm great. I need an update on John Fetterman, the Democratic nominee for Senate who will be facing Dr. Oz. I have tried to decipher what the story is on his health. What do you know?
What I know is that in 2017, his doctor had told him that not only did he need to lose weight, he was over 400 pounds, but he also had a heart condition. And he needed to be taking blood thinner. You know, I mean, really compartmentalizing it, but that's basically what they told him. What he did do is lose the weight. It was sort of dramatic. Very quickly he lost it. But he didn't ever go back to the doctor, never took the blood thinner. And that is why he fell ill. It was not why he had the stroke, but that is why he fell ill and had to have the pacemaker. And he never sort of revealed this. And now that's all caught up with him. And his doctor put out a statement the other day saying in effect, this is what, happened. He almost died. And we now have him in a pacemaker and taking a blood thinner, and he's on the road to recovery.
Now, there are lots of kinds of strokes, and I have friends who've had different kinds of strokes, and one of them is, 95% recovered, but he speaks slowly. And right. Others take a long time to recover, and others, you don't even know that they had the event. This does not appear to be one of those. This appears to be some major rehab time ahead, which is not exactly what you want when Dr. Oz is out there. Dave McCormick conceded to him. Dr. Oz is the nominee. He's not really a traditional Republican, but John Fetterman, I thought he was going to beat Fetterman anyway. It was the Barnett woman that worried me about losing. So I think Dr. Oz is going to win, but what is the deal on when Fetterman returns? Do you have any idea when he returns to public conversation?
We really have no idea. It is just something that that is, we haven't seen him. We haven't heard him. There have been photos put out by his wife, Giselle, but, we have not seen or heard him since a couple days before the election. So it's almost been a month.
Okay, I'm going to go out here and I've seen enough. The Decision Desk is calling Josh Shapiro governor of Pennsylvania and Dr. Oz as senator of Pennsylvania because, frankly, the other two are not competitive. What do you think?
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're not
a lot of split tickets.
You must be reading Selena Zito.
Yeah, lots of split tickets coming up because Josh Shapiro is a great candidate against a guy who's from the right of the right of the right. Not in the mainstream. Did you call him a religious nationalist? I have a friend who likes to use that term, but he uses it broadly. And I tell me why you think that.
I think I have a great piece about him and all the problems that he has right now. But that's just among part of his problem. He indicates that he is sent by God for this
Ooh, right. Never a good sign.
Yeah, I know, but trying to tell you guys.
Yeah, never sent by God is never a good way to campaign. You've been sent by God to run the beer stand at the parish carnival. That's what God sends you to do.
That is absolutely correct. And yeah. I wouldn't, even though McCormick did not win, and by the way, that was an incredibly close race. He's not going anywhere. I wouldn't be shocked that this time next year we're talking about him kicking off his race to run against Bob Casey.
I agree. And that'll be a 2024 race, and he'll have a shot at it. And he'd have been the nominee if any of the other center-right candidates had dropped out. And so I think they kind of burned some bridges. What do you think?
McCormick didn't burn any bridges.
No, the other set, Carla Sands and others. And I like the Ambassador Sands. Oh. But when you hang around with 7%, you don't help yourself.
Yeah, Kathy Barnett, Jeff Bardos. These are people that, you know, very similar to the other people in the governor's race in Pennsylvania. You don't stick in when you have zero chance. You're just in there for a vanity project that, you know, at that point.
Sunk cost. People don't know. And that's happening in Missouri. Everyone not named X should. I don't know who's the leader, but they ought to get together and draw straws if they're not Eric Greitens and one of them come out, because the Democrats are going to nominate Greitens and we're going to lose the seat, we being Republicans.
Yep.
I like talking to Selena because we usually agree. How are those pirates doing, Selena?
I don't know.
Let me tell you, you don't have to check the standings. I'll be right back. Selena Zito can be found at selenazito.com. Everything she writes is right there, and I'll be right back for hour number two on the Monday edition of the UHF. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. It's D-Day, the anniversary of D-Day, June 6th in the year of our Lord, 2022. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Joined as I am most Mondays by Jake Sherman. He is one of the editors-in-chief of Punchbowl News, which you can subscribe to, and you will get in your morning email for free if you go to punchbowlnews.com, and I recommend it. Jake, how long have we been doing it? When did Punchbowl News, we have a first today, a first time I've just actually disagreed with you in Punchbowl News, so I want to know how long it's been since you launched it.
January 2021. But I've been coming on for much longer than that, Hugh, as you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Since the Playbook days.
Playbook days, but for the 15 months of Punchbowl News, I've never, ever disagreed with something. It's an information thing. I disagree with this sentence. House Republican leadership. This is going to be a particularly difficult week for House GOP leaders, especially Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Jake, this is a great week for Kevin McCarthy, because the 1-6 committee is a joke. It brings Republicans together, recognizing it's a joke. It overly politicizes an already desperate Democratic Party, and they're not paying attention to what Americans care about. So I'm all for, and when the ratings come in and I get more people on my forlorn MSNBC show than they get on Thursday night, game over, game set, match, Democrats blew it.
Oh, I think they're going to get a lot of people. I'm just not, I'm not sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a fine opinion to have. That's one way to look at it. I happen to disagree. I actually think, and we're allowed to disagree on this. I actually think that this is going to be a quite damaged, like the argument that it's a sham is a fine argument to hold if you wanted. It's a fine argument to hold. But I actually think there's going to be a good deal of new information that comes out of this. Let me put it that way.
Okay, so you know why I think it's a sham is because they vetoed Jim Banks as the chairman, and they picked. And Liz is, by the way, stipulate. Liz is a friend of mine. I hope she's reelected. I don't know the other guy at all, and he's not running. But the two Republicans they got to serve despite the leadership. And so the leadership has got nobody but these two people. I think it brings. So the statement I'm disagreeing with is only that it's going to be a difficult week for Kevin McCarthy. He's popping champagne,
well,
Jake.
It's not going to be a difficult week for McCarthy internally. But if there's stuff that comes out, I'm not saying internally. My point is that it could be a difficult week for McCarthy, given there could be damaging information coming out, not about him, but about Republicans writ large and about Donald Trump. That's all I meant.
I don't see it. Let me try my second part of my argument. The last thing Americans are concerned with right now, they know that January 6th was bad. Almost 900 people invaded the Capitol. They're all being prosecuted. Peter Navarro is in shackles. And I told people, Peter was a Democrat when I first met him running for mayor of San Diego and opposed him. He was a Democrat when he ran for Congress. He was a Democrat when he ran for county supervisor. He's always been erratic, iconoclastic, occasionally charming, and a pain in the backside. But Peter Navarro is not he's not a Republican. I really don't care what happens to Peter Navarro. So they clap him in chains. I'm not surprised he managed to tick off everyone at DOJ by being Peter. So the real issue, though, is gas is at $6 a gallon in Los Angeles, Jake. That's the issue
I'm
in America.
I'm not arguing that this is a top issue for anybody. That's not my argument. My argument is solely what I said before. I agree with you, and I've made this point too much criticism on my employer on MSNBC, on my, I guess, part-time employer. I believe that there's been an argument on MSNBC that I've disagreed with, that which is Democrats should run on. Well, I don't disagree with it. Let me put it this way. I don't think that any Democrats agree with it, that they should run and they would win on an argument of we're upholding democracy, we meaning the Democrats. I don't see that being their strategy. I don't think that anybody thinks that's their strategy, that would be a winning strategy. So I actually agree with you that this is not going to be a big issue in 2022. I agree that gas and inflation and all those other things are a much bigger issue.
NBC and I parted ways after 4 years in December. And if I ever go back on, it will be to say, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. Because Yamiche saying it's a blockbuster set of hearings, honest to goodness, Jake, I was a junior in high school, between sophomore and junior. I had to take American government in the summer of 1973. And I watched the Watergate hearing. You had no idea what was going to happen. I mean, you were edge of your seat. We watched that 4 hours a day for summer school, and it was the best summer school class I ever had. Because, you had really no idea what anyone was going to. Alexander Butterfield comes up and says, oh, there's a tape machine in the White House. You know, nobody, John Dean got up there and lied. I mean, it just was wild. It was great. What do you think the rating? Do you think they'll get a one share for this thing?
I have no idea what the ratings will be. I can just tell you from my reporting is that they have a lot of stuff that we've never seen, heard, or knew before.
Oh, look, I'm open to that. Does any of it involve anyone that we've ever heard of?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. I would assume so, yes.
Because if they bring me yet another Proud Boy Nutter from Florida who drove up and was talking on his walkie-talkie 10-4 to another, whatever they call him, a bunch of these Daniel Boone hat-wearing people were running up to D.C. talking to each other on their CBs. I just if they don't have anything real, what a bust. I mean, it's going to be what was the worst musical opening ever? 9 at the Kennedy Center? That's before you were born, I think.
Well, listen, here's what I would say. I think it will be people that we've heard of. I think it will be, and listen, I could be wrong. It's going to be Thursday night. It's going to be prime time. I do think people will turn out, to be honest with you. I think it will get decent ratings. Why do I think so? Because I think a lot of people are interested in this. Remember, this is mostly about Trump, mostly about the Trump administration. People tuned in for the Trump administration. You remember that, and you know that.
They tuned in for Trump. They did not. I honestly cannot say. Who's the chairman of this committee?
Benny Thompson.
Okay. I wouldn't know him if I walked into an elevator with him. I know Liz. And Liz and I have talked about the committee, and we just disagree. And I hope that she survives re-election, because when we get back to being on China, she's very smart about China. But other than Liz, I don't know who's on it. Other than Elaine Luria, who lost her seat by joining this thing. And she was going to lose her seat anyway because of the redistricting. But she's toast. And she's going to try and, she's going to be there with a newspaper in front of her face. She doesn't want people to see her on this committee.
I think that's, I don't know about that, but I do think that But you can't argue it both ways. You can't say that this has no political implication in 2022, but it could have a political implication for Luria. I don't know how.
I can argue both ways, because what you wrote is that it's going to be bad for Kevin McCarthy. My position is, no, it's going to be very good for Kevin McCarthy. It's going to be very bad for Democrats, especially Elaine Luria, who lost a D+3 to an R+2 district, I think. So that I'm not arguing against myself. I'm just saying I disagree with your opinion in Punchbowl, but I do think it's going to, you're looking at the wrong people who are covering. Watch Elaine Luria's body language in this thing. If she says a lot, if she tries to grab a headline, I will buy you dinner, Jake.
I think you already owe me dinner for something. I
probably do. I owe everyone in the city dinner, because I thought Teddy Kennedy was going to beat Jimmy Carter in 1980 for the nomination. So I've been owing dinners forever.
You owe me dinner. You owe me dinner because you thought the new Supreme Court justice whose name is
would get 60.
Right now, yeah. Would get 60. Right.
I thought the over under was 60, and that was before her testimony on not knowing how to define a woman. That was a clincher. By the way, last thing, the comment yesterday by Pete Buttigieg that the Republicans are talking about Mickey Mouse. Does he not get it that actually is a winning issue, that Disney and corporate America going woke is a winning issue? Does he genuinely not understand that?
I think that it's been interesting to hear the reaction. I've heard reactions from some of my friends who are both Democrats and Republicans who say these companies should stay out of politics. I actually think they don't have a choice but to get into politics in today's day and age. Everyone is in politics. Everybody has to have an opinion. That's just the culture that we're in. But I don't know if it's a winning issue or a losing issue, but I just think these companies don't have a choice.
But Pete leaned into it voluntarily. It wasn't part of the question set. And I thought to myself, Ron DeSantis doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's got Phil Cox and gang doing his strategery. And I just don't think he makes a lot of mistakes. Disney is not the popular kind. Jake, I love PunchbowlNews.com. We disagree every 15 months. Jake and I disagree. But I still read them every single morning, as you should. PunchbowlNews.com. It's the new voice for common sense and what's actually happening in D.C. Go subscribe today and come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Kurt Winstead is running for the Congress in the new seat created in Tennessee, the Tennessee 5th Congressional District. He joins me now from the 5th. Good morning, General Winstead. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well this morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me on. First of all, I'm not in the 5th this morning.
Oh, you are? Where
are
you?
Del Rio, Texas.
Oh, you're
in Del Rio, Texas.
Well, you've got orange in your background, so I thought maybe you were in Cleveland and we're going to a Browns event, Kurt. What are you doing in Del Rio?
Well, this border crisis is seriously a crisis, and so we came down yesterday to see it for ourselves. And we spent the afternoon, and we'll spend most of the day today with the sheriff and deputies of Valverde County here in Texas, right on the border. And yesterday, we're going along. We're looking at the unfinished Trump wall, which is a problem. We're getting all the problems that the sheriffs are telling we're having. We don't have enough Border Patrol agents down here. And what did we run up on? But four children being brought across the river, and we see this, seven-year-old, six-year-old, four-year-old, and one-and-a-half-year-old. Two men bring them across, abandoning them. And then the Border Patrol that was called, and also the sheriff helped pick them up, get them to safety. If we had not been there, those children would probably be abandoned, and Lord knows what would happen to them.
What does the Border Patrol do with the babies, General Winston?
They take them. First of all, there's not enough Border Patrol. That's one of the problems. The federal government's not providing enough Border Patrol help. So the sheriffs locate them. They call the Border Patrol. Hopefully they'll be there soon. They do the best they can. They're working as well as they could under the circumstances. They take them, and then they have to process them. And when they process them, they're not on the border checking for anything else. And if there's not enough of the Border Patrol around, this may take hours. They process them, get them to a safe place, make sure they're healthy, and then they're disseminated into the country.
Now, General, I don't want to surprise you. I'm one of those Republicans who's considered liberal on immigration because I want a very strong, tall, double-sided wall and a lot of enforcement. But I also want very easy regularization for people who get there, and I want those children to be taken care of.
some Republicans want everyone to leave. I'm different. I want a big wall and a lot of enforcement to deter. But if they're here, I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to kick people out if they're law-abiding folks. What's your position on immigration?
No, it's we got to stop the illegal part of it. We're a nation of immigrants. We've been a nation of immigrants from the beginning. And as long as it's done legally, that's no problem. There's a process for it. But to get that process reformed, we have to stop the illegal part first. I mean, there's down here, we've just seen it, you know, face to face. The people that are here legally are the ones that cry the loudest about the illegal immigrants.
Well, that's why I think the Latino vote is shifting our way. I think the Republicans are picking up the Latino vote because those folks waited for the 86 Act or they came in legally and they want to stop the flow so that the country can stabilize and reopen to normal immigration and possibly a Bracero program that's opened up. General, how long are you going to be down there for?
We'll be going back tonight. So okay. 2 days.
Okay. So tell me a little bit. Tell me a little bit. There's been a development in your race. I don't know if Morgan Ortega has joined your advisory campaign after she was tossed out by the corrupt Tennessee Republican Party, but a different candidate sued and won the right to be on the ballot. I don't know what's going on in the Tennessee 5th. I know Morgan's supporting you, so I'm with you. What's going on and how are you doing?
Well, we're running our campaign. We've run the same campaign from the beginning. We're staying on track. We're not getting involved in any of this. This is sidetrack issue stuff. We're just trying to run our campaign, consider what's the important issues and policy decisions that need to be made for the 5th District from us. And that's kind of where we're staying the course.
And how is your fundraising going, General?
It's going well. It's going well. Of course, we had our first disclosure at the end of March, and we had a little over $1 million in the bank and the majority, about 99% of it from Tennessee, about 73% of it from our 6 counties, which was awesome. We'll fundraise wherever and whenever it needs to be done. That is not a problem. But our first quarter was solid. It showed a lot of investment talk, more than just donations, but people investing in our 5th district, the 6 counties.
Now, Kurt Winstead, I began the hour with Jake Sherman, who's a Beltway guy like I am. And he has written this morning that the January 6th hearing on Thursday is going to be very bad for Kevin McCarthy. I could not disagree more. I think the American people think this is foolish, that we know the 900 people who broke into the Capitol, and that it's all a bunch of an attempt to divert from inflation, which is at 8.5% nationally and probably higher in some places. What do you think about the show trial on Thursday night?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think we need to be concentrating on governing and inflation. And this is old news. We need to move forward. We need to think about the future and put America first type mentality. We need to think about how to govern and move forward and get this behind us.
Now, when you talk to people, what's gas cost in Tennessee? If you make a side trip to California, you'll pay $5 to $6 a gallon and maybe more. I'm not sure what it is in the Volunteer State.
It's hitting around $4.50. It'll go up for a while, then come around. I mean, it's high. It's not fun. And people forget, you know, Tennessee is a very rural state outside of the 4 big cities. And so the diesel and the farmland, I mean, it's affecting that. It will affect food prices even more if we continue down this road. We've got to pull it back and stop it.
There's nothing a state official can do. That's up to Congress to cut spending. It used to be that Republicans ran on cutting spending. Are you Kurt Winstead?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We have to. That's what's driving the inflation right now. It's this now, you know, deficit spending at this point.
Now, the last question for you, General. You're an Army guy. You're Army Reserve, National Guard Reserve. I'm in a Navy family. I'm just a civilian. But do you think the budget needs to tilt towards the Navy, or do you think it's one-third with the Space Force a little bit off the top of everyone?
Well, that's, first of all, I'm going to ostracize a bunch of people if I answer the question. My answer is this. Go military.
Go military. You're a good candidate, General. Keep coming back. Keep us posted. Good luck down at the border today. And I love your background. Whenever you come on the Hugh Hewitt Show, if you've got Cleveland Browns orange behind you, we're going to get along just fine. Thank you, General.
Hugh, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway. But I want my listeners in Portland, Maine on AM 560 News Radio and FM 98.5 to give a particularly close listen, and to my other affiliates in Maine, because Paul LePage is my guest. Yes, your once and future governor is joining me for the first time ever on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Governor LePage, welcome. It's good to have you on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on.
Now, nobody knows you in my audience outside of those people in Maine, and I'm on 450 affiliates. So I want to start with Paul LePage 101. You were the governor for 8 years. I assume term limits sent you away. Now you're back. You're running again. You're the favorite. Tell us about you.
Well, I'm a Mainer, born, raised, educated, and worked most of my life in Maine. I was away for a few years back in the 70s. Come from a very large family, left home at 11 and crawled my way through life. Made it to the governorship and coming back.
Now, Governor LePage, I'm a part-timer in Maine. I got a lot of family up there. We go in a lot. What do you think of us out-of-towners who show up and clog the streets in the summer?
I love it. I absolutely love it. Keep on coming, and I hope you come fast and heavy this summer because we can use your help. You go to our restaurants, you shop in our stores, and you're just absolutely wonderful, particularly when people come up with their families and stay the whole summer. It's just terrific.
Yeah, I was in Portland a couple of months ago because we made an investment in something called Sea Bags. I wanted to see their new headquarters. Portland is reopened. I think the whole state's reopened. Am I right about that, Governor?
Well, it's getting there. It's getting there. It's been quite a shutdown here. This governor was pretty harsh on Mainers, but yes, we're opening up now. It's a matter of trying to get people back to work and producing and helping. Helping the economy grow and to be around when our guests come to, so we can wait on them in restaurants and wait on them in our stores. But right now, it's hard. We're having, like many places around the country, we're having a hard time finding workers.
You know, Governor, the one thing I don't like about Maine is that you're all Red Sox and Patriots fans, but I overlook that. When I was there, though, people are very, very nostalgic for you because it's been a rough 4 years under the current regime.
Oh, it's been difficult, yes. And I'll tell you, I'm so excited. It dwarfs the excitement of 2010 and 2014. It's just been incredible. I mean, last Sunday we went to the Capitol Park in Augusta. There's over 1,000 people. They came to an outside church service. And, I mean, 1,000 people is incredible for a Sunday morning.
In Augusta? Yeah.
In Augusta, that's... Maine, at Capitol Park. We couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe the amount of people that showed up.
So I have, I know Angus King a little bit. I know Susan Collins a little bit. They agree on something. The Biden administration is trying to kill the lobster industry right now, Governor. What can a governor do about that?
Well, this governor should lead the charge, and she should be leading the fight. She should have her name on the suit, the state of Maine versus the United States government. But what she's done is she's gotten intervener status, which means she's going to send a letter and call it a day. And the lobster may have to fight on their own. The data being used is incorrect. It's false data. And it's all about getting deep water windmills. And that's all this is all about. We haven't seen a right whale in Maine waters in over 25 years.
And the right whale is the species that's allegedly being affected. I used to do endangered species law for land critters, a couple of sea critters, but mostly land critters, Governor. And when I read that, it's just environmental extremism that don't want you to fish for lobster.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what they do what is happening, there's a big movement to get deep water windmills, floating windmills, and this is what it's all about. And unfortunately, the people heading up the windmill project are people that are funding the lawsuit. So it's incredible.
So, Governor, talk to me about your tax structure. I'm not a resident of Maine, so I don't really pay it. But I want to know what you think about the tax structure and what you think can be done to help people who are dealing with inflation. A tax cut would certainly help.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this governor is doing one of the worst things that we could possibly do in a high inflation rate, is sending out $850 checks instead of permanently cutting the income tax. I believe the income tax needs to be phased out. We tried to lower it. We lowered it in 11, then we lost the majority. And then as I was leaving the governorship, we tried to lower it another 3 points, and this governor decided she wanted the money and she spent it. So
you know, that's amazing. Doug Ducey told me that you were running. Doug Ducey said you got to get Paul LePage on because he wants to do the flat tax like we did in Arizona. I didn't even know you were back in the game. And he said you're running on a lower taxes platform. I think that's the way that Republicans win.
Exactly. You know, fight inflation and phase out the income tax. And so the problem with Maine right now is all the affluent people leave for 6 months and a day. So that, you know, they become residents of Arizona, Florida, Texas, South Carolina. They don't pay income tax, and then they come back in the summer. If we phased out the income tax, these people would probably only go away January and February and be here 10 months a year instead of less than 6 months. So yeah. That's really the big issue there is let's keep the Mainers here. And the problem with them going to Florida, their families follow them, and so it's a long-term brain drain to our state, not mentioning the money that goes with them.
You know, back when I lived in California, Rick Perry was governor of Texas, and he and Ducey would swoop in and grab businesses. It sounds like Ron DeSantis is doing that to the people who live in Maine 5 months and 29 days a year.
Absolutely correct. And Rick Perry, you know, took pride in taking people from California. He's a
yes.
good friend. he's a great governor, and Doug Ducey same way. I mean, they're just sitting back, and it's like, you know, picking fish out of a bowl. It's just incredible what the liberals have done to this country, and what's happening in California, and it's, unfortunately, this administration in Maine is trying to mimic California, which is a scary thing.
Now, Governor, what is your website? How do people find Paul LePage for governor? Where do they go?
It's govlepage, govlepage.com, govlepage.com. I'll tell you, primaries are coming up June 14th, and if you're able to contribute, we'd like you to contribute for the 14th, because after the 14th of the primary, contributions, maximum contributions drop in half.
Yeah, that's so unconstitutional. Hasn't anyone challenged that? I hate those laws.
I agree. And we're gonna fix them come January. In fact, what they've done, they've even gone one step further. Next year in Maine, businesses will no longer be able to contribute to campaigns. They've just passed a law.
Please tell me you haven't got that screwy ranked voting. Do you have ranked voting up there?
We have ranked voting for congressional seats and the U.S. Senate, but we do not have it in state elections. It's deemed unconstitutional.
Well, thank goodness. Gov LePage, govlepage.com, Gov LePage. Governor, keep coming back. We got a great audience in Portland and in the rest of the state. They love hearing from you, and I look forward to having you there as governor again.
Well, I look forward to greeting you when you come back to Maine.
Back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Josh Krauthauer is the political editor, I think, or he's the writer for National Journal. Follow him at Hotline Josh. Good morning, Josh. There's a lot going on. The British Tories are going to have a vote of confidence or no confidence in Boris Johnson. The Supreme Court releases opinions, and California votes tomorrow. Those are real stories. The January 6th committee has hearings on Thursday night, which I don't think is a story, and I don't think their ratings are going to be very good, except for the hardcore hate Trump people. What do you think about all four of those things?
Well, look, it's a story I'll be watching, but politically speaking, it's not going to move the needle a bit, I wouldn't expect. And we're already hearing from Axios that there's some division within the committee between Liz Cheney and Jamie Raskin, the Republican and Democrat alike. So I just think we know a lot of the stuff that happened on January 6th. They've been leaking some interesting nuggets throughout the last few months, but I don't imagine. I mean, this is the kind of hearing that I don't think it's going to draw a lot of attention, because what's new? What is something that the public watching or not watching, what's going to be unexpected? I don't think a lot of this is something that's new to a lot of Americans. There's also an interesting NBC News poll out today showing that fewer Americans actually are blaming President Trump for January 6th, which, I mean, maybe that's the goal, to at least remind the public about what happened on January 6th, to have a contemporaneous historical document.
I think the goal is to get Elaine Luria out of Congress, because she's the one who's going to suffer from this, because her district got redistricted. She had a decent chance of winning re-election in a slightly red district, not after her face is on this committee, which Republicans just view as inimical to due process and fair play. But Josh, let's go to the California elections. I'm hoping that Lonnie Chen gets to the final two and that Nathan Hochman gets to the final two for controller and AG. And I'm hoping Rick Caruso wins the mayor. What do you know about California? Any prayer for those three?
Well, yes, on all three counts. But I think the big story, Hugh, relatedly, is Rick Caruso is going to finish strong in the mayor's race in Los Angeles, running solely on an anti-crime, anti-homelessness, anti-disorder message. Like, crime is the number one issue.
Yep.
In Los Angeles, the heavily Democratic city, and a Bloomberg type, a former Republican turned moderate Democrat, is on track to make the runoff, certainly, and may even have a chance to win outright. I think that's less likely, but that's a possibility. It's one we're watching. Combined with that, in San Francisco, the most liberal city in the country, the very left-wing DA, Chesa Boudin, is very likely going to be ousted in a recall in the other part of California, in Northern California, an even more liberal city by Democrats. This is a seismic story. The issue of crime is going to be number one, number two, number three in a lot of these jurisdictions across the country. And it's one that Democrats have, they've been evolving, and now they're rejecting the defund the police movement that so captured the hearts of progressives a couple of years ago. But there's definitely scar tissue left over. And even very liberal Democratic voters in these cities are willing to vote for a former Republican in Los Angeles and oust a very liberal progressive prosecutor in San Francisco because they're so sick and tired of the disorder and crime.
Crime and inflation and crime, and add in homelessness, and depending on where you live, if you live in an urban setting where it's a real problem, it's not going to be a problem in Kansas, right? But if you are on the coast, crime and inflation and homelessness, inflation, crime, and homelessness, that's the November election, isn't it, Josh?
It is. And look, if Democrats were a little smarter, they'd pair some of their small-scale gun measures and public safety measures with more police officers, more money. I mean, they would not just look at it as a gun issue. They'd look at it as a crime issue. And I think that would be the smart way for Democrats to handle the issue of mass shootings, the issue of all these horrible incidents, such as including a mass shooting in Philadelphia over the weekend and in a bunch of other cities. Like, they need to stop, sounding like they're pandering to the far left on this issue. I think they've gotten past the point where they're doing that, but now they need to really sound like they're tough on crime, and that's been a real difficulty for the party.
They can't do that because they lose their progs. The progressives do not want more money for the police. They just don't, Josh.
That's the problem. That is the problem. Now, the progressives only make up, a third of the party, right? I mean, maybe even less on the issue of crime. You see African-Americans, Hispanics, a diverse coalition of people sick and tired of the left on the issue of defunding the police or not funding or not increasing the amount of law enforcement in these hot spots. But they're very loud. They're on Twitter and they're scaring the Dickens out of the White House and a lot of Democratic leadership.
And the president is bumbling and fumbling his way through every speech. He's going to go see MBS in Saudi Arabia. He's not getting the weapons to Ukraine. He's not in control. And they send out Pete Buttigieg and Gina Raimondo. They're two Rhodes Scholars, and they don't make a dent in the – I don't know if anyone's watching the Sunday shows anymore, Josh, but you tell me. Does anyone make a dent right now in this political wall that is red headed towards the Democrats, the wave?
Well, it's going to be hard because inflation, the economy, this general pessimism is the dominant theme in 2022. I actually did watch the Sunday shows, and Pete Buttigieg made a comment about that we inherited a recession, if not a depression.
Yes.
In the first quarter of 2021. That's not accurate. That's not true. And when you have to basically not be honest about talking about where the economy was and where you're responsible. I mean, I think a good PR strategy is acknowledge mistakes, but go on offense from there. When you can't even acknowledge that spending that much money in 2021 was a mistake, like Janet Yellen seems to have done, then you're in a bad spot. People don't believe you. People don't trust you.
Amen. Amen. Josh Krosshauer. Supreme Court holds down, hands down decision today. We will watch that. Boris Johnson has a vote of confidence tonight. I'll report on that tomorrow. I'll report on everything that's news overnight. So come back and join me again tomorrow on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.